Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to the Might is Right Network at mightisright.net. At Might is Right Network, there is streaming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The Might is Right Network at mightisright.net. Be there!
Welcome to the Might is Right Network. Today is Tuesday, February 24th, 2015, and this is the Berserker Bastion. I'm your host, Ruthless Rob, and the Might is Right Network has live podcast on Monday, Valkyrie Underground, Tuesday, the Berserker Bastion, Thursday, the Might is Right Power Hour. Between the live podcast at the Might is Right Network, we stream 24 hours a day, some of the best material available, such as Dr. William Pierce, The Ghost Wolf, Terrible Tommy, Matt Hale, and numerous audiobooks chapter by chapter. We also stream some of the best music of the white race. If you have suggestions to improve the network and or website, you may contact us at either the email address that's located at the bottom of the page or the link above on the right, and I think it says suggestions and complaints, and it's located at the top of the page on the right side of the player. If you like the network, then a great way to help us out is to spread the link around the internet. Tonight's topic will be Jew atrocities. I'll say that again, Jew atrocities. And it's taken from book one of Nature's Eternal Religion that was written by Ben Clausen, and it was published in 1973. Book one was titled The Unavenged Outrage, and I'll be reading from chapter 8. And there will also be another reading this evening, something to talk about. But the chapter 8 that I'll be focusing on a little bit tonight is titled A Few Examples of Jewish Atrocities. And just a little blurb on what it's about. It's throughout their history, the Jews have committed millions of atrocities, most of which will never be recorded, and most of which are intentionally covered up and lost to history. Not only have they committed millions of atrocities throughout their history, flagrantly and constantly, but they are perpetrating atrocities today in both the East and West. In fact, they are committing atrocities today in every country of the world, including the United States. I wanted to make a few comments here. I have to say this. Hate is good. I often see it posted in other places. People get down on it. And I don't think you should let anyone tell you otherwise. I sometimes hear others go on and on about all the bad that comes from hate. And I can tell you this, they are either lying or they don't know what they are talking about. It is more that Christian talk, you know, the crazy Christian talk about cowering like dogs before our Jew masters. We must hate them, hunt them down, and tear their throats out. Now, that's my opinion. That's how I feel about this. You know, people will always get down on this hate, on the word hate. They can't deal with it. And it comes from this religion, and it comes from some of this other bullshit, you know, the psychobabble, you know, how it affects and hurts us. And that's all bullshit. Sometime we'll go on and on about that. But I first understood and awoke to the Jew problem by way of Russian history and the revolution of 1917. The Bolshevik Jew destroyed Tsarist Russia with the financial support of wealthy, scheming, and treacherous New York Jew filth. The trail of scheming Jews went from New York to London, Berlin, and then to Moscow. I saw a long line of Jews involved in the worst atrocities ever known on this planet. They mass murdered tens of millions, to the tune of somewhere around 60 million, during their reign of terror in Russia, and they're still there, just they're not killing as many. And I believe a payback is in order. You know, an eye for an eye, a payment in kind. The Jew, and that's all of them, must be eliminated, genocided down to the last frozen embryo, including their dogs and cats and all their other pets. And I'm only saying what they have said before regarding the non-Jew, the Goy. That's what they have said about us. So now it's time to give them a dose of their own medicine. They must be utterly destroyed, and those among us who are too weak, too compassionate, are too Christ-insane, and just don't have the stomach for it, then they can join their pet Jew as we send them all to the promised land. Remember, the Jew, niggers, mestizos, and mongoloids don't care about the white race, and they intend to eradicate our kind from the planet. They often talk about it openly, except for the mongoloid Asiatics who say almost nothing, which speaks volumes in itself. We also have race traders within our own ranks who work for our enemies to destroy the white race. No one ever really defends or comes to the aid of the white race. And I'm not bellyaching about this, I'm just stating a fact. You know, no one really sends us aid, and, you know, for our people who are unemployed or starving or on the streets, you know, they don't give a shit about them, you know, but we're helping all these muds overseas, you know, sending them care packages and anything else we can. And except for a few hardcore racialists, they're the only ones who really care anything at all about the white race. And even the Jews have been quoted as saying that. I've read it. We cannot be soft-hearted if we intend to survive into the future. This is kind of my disclaimer, but after awakening to the Jew problem, I was never really sidetracked by the stories of the Rothschilds, the Jesuits, the Illuminati, Freemasons, Trilateral Commission, Council of Foreign Relations, the WBIMF, that's the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, MK Ultra, CIA, FBI, the Federal Reserve, the Bilderbergers, Democrats, Republicans, neocons, liberals, conservatives, libertarians, et cetera, on and on. And, you know, I've read about all of these, and I always heard about the many secret societies. And as I said, I read about them, but just to understand who all these players were. But I never really focused solely on any one secret society or group, except for the Jew, because their name always kept coming up to the top of the heap. The Jew was always my focus, not the good Jew, not the bad Jew or the kike Jew, just the Jew, which is every Jew, the entire fucking tribe of filth. including, and I like to say this from my standpoint, the half, and I mean half Jew, and I'll go down this list here, half, quarter, eighth, 16th, 32nd, and I would go so far, 64th, 128th, 256th. I don't give a shit. I don't like these bastards. If we can get down and go as far as we can to eradicate these bastards, so much the better. But you get the idea. But realistically, in these hereditary sites, they sometimes talk about once you get down to 132nd or you go back about five generations, something like that, you pretty much, you know, have, you know, no effect from, you know, your ancestors. Once it goes back, I think I said five, but something like that, four or five generations. But all of them must go. They are a collective, a tribe, and they must be dealt with as such. We cannot weed out the few and hope to accomplish any satisfactory results. And I was never really sidetracked by any of these organizations and secret societies because the Jew is everywhere and often leading the opposition and influencing disturbances, dissent, unrest, agitation, disorder, subversion, conspiracies, treachery, and destruction wherever possible. And they do say that. They come right out and they just say that there's nothing that you can do for us. You know, we're here. You can't create anything that we're going to like or be satisfied with. Our job and what we are, we just destroy. They've written that. They've been quoted as saying that in the books that they have written. And the Jew is the destroyer of white cultures and societies. The Jew works tirelessly as a well-organized collective. And they do have tangible goals. That's the one thing about them. They're organized, and they do work towards these goals. And they're focused on them, you could say, every minute of the day. And they've been doing this for centuries, millennia, without end. They have genocided other races, and now they are focused on the white race. Now I'm going to go ahead and begin with this reading. And this is from, as I said, Chapter 8 of Nature's Eternal Religion, and it was titled, A Few Examples of Jewish Atrocities. Throughout their history, the Jews have committed millions of atrocities, most of which will never be recorded and most of which are intentionally covered up and lost to history. Not only have they committed millions of atrocities throughout their history, they are perpetrating atrocities today in Russia, in China, in Cuba, Hungary, and in Germany. In fact, they are committing atrocities today in every country of the world and here in the United States. Therefore, to list a few paltry examples does not do the subject justice. However, since so many people are so completely unfamiliar with the nature of these atrocities, I believe that reciting a few examples of Jew atrocities will at least partially serve to shed some light on the fierceness of the Jewish nature, the vast immensity of their satanic program, and the diabolical cruelty perpetrated by the Jews upon the host nations amongst whom they have lived and grown fat. The Jewish religion itself is based on hatred, deception, and the destruction of all other nations. In the Old Testament, starting with Deuteronomy 20:10, we find a policy of deceit and destruction spelled out by the Jewish script writers. When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it, and it shall be. If it make the answer of peace and open unto thee, then it shall be, that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. And when the Lord thy God hath delivered it into thine hands, thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword, but the women and the little ones and the cattle and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shalt thou take unto thyself, and thou shalt eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. But of the cities of these people, which the Lord thy God doth give thee for an inheritance, thou shalt save alive nothing that breatheth. There we have the crux of the Jewish religion, which we, the white people, have foolishly been partners in worship. By cunning, by treachery, by deceit, the Jews claim they have an inherent God-given right to destroy, kill, and obliterate all other peoples and nations that they may choose to victimize. After all, the Lord commanded it. At least, so the Jewish scriptwriters say, and hundreds of millions of white Gentiles have been stupid enough and gullible enough to support them in this philosophy. The stupidity, the gullibility, and the cooperation of the Gentiles as a whole, and the white Gentiles in particular in this respect, has been and is today a key factor in the Jews' ability to divide, conquer, and destroy vast numbers of their enemies far in excess of their own numbers. The Jews' diabolical cunning in being able to pervert the minds of their victims so that the victims themselves will help in their own destruction is a paramount factor in the Jewish program of world conquest and world destruction. The old saying that whom the gods would destroy, they first made mad, should really read, whom the Jews would destroy. They first proceed to unhinge their minds to the point where their victims will then help to destroy themselves. Let us now look at a few examples of Jewish atrocities in action. Let us also remember the Jew axiom to always kill the best, thereby forever destroying any leadership that a people or nation might have or might develop in the future. The murder of Dresden. Before World War II, the city of Dresden was one of the most beautiful in the world. In fact, the word Dresden was synonymous with culture, beauty, and art. Like so many other cities in Germany, this city in particular was rich in German culture and the heritage of its people. The castle, the opera, the Hofkirche, the Frauenkirche, to name a few amongst thousands of other buildings, were beautiful and outstanding examples of German and white culture. Many of these beautiful buildings dated back 1,000 years or more. The normal population of Dresden was about 600,000. In February of 1945, as the refugees from the eastern countries were fleeing before the Red Army and seeking safety in the west, a large number of them fled to the apparent safety of Dresden and swelled the population of that city to over 1.2 million people. These were people who had fought the communist and were strongly anti-communist. We must remember that at this period of history, World War II was practically over, and Dresden was by no stretch of the imagination a military objective. In judging what follows, we must also keep in mind that Dresden represented the finest examples of German art and culture, that it was not a military objective, and that it was swollen at this time with refugees fleeing before the Red Army, the barbarians of the East. On the night of February 13, 1945, at 10:13 p.m., British bombers started dropping hundreds of thousands of firebombs on the poor, helpless refugees and citizens of Dresden who were only trying to escape the butchery of the Red Army. These raids were carefully planned by these heinous and diabolical Jews to reap the maximum in death and destruction. The timing was such that it would hit the citizens of Dresden at a time when they were out on the streets celebrating a Christian religious holiday. Thousands were burned alive. When the first raid was over and the survivors came out of their shelters to begin rescue operations, and when thousands of firefighters arrived from other cities to help in the rescue, the treacherous Jews struck again at 1:30 a.m. February 14th, only 3 hours after the first attack, a second and larger force of British bombers rained down more death and destruction on the helpless white men, women, and children below. So many firebombs had been concentrated on this once beautiful old city of Dresden that a firestorm of hurricane proportions engulfed the whole city. The heat was so intense that once live people were shriveled into corpses, reduced to half their size. Thousands of people hiding in the air raid shelters were melted into one pool of liquid. A mother with her baby in her arms, was found melted into the pavement, forming a small tar statue. In a furious, fiendish effort to incinerate this beautiful city of Dresden, the city of art and culture, more than 650,000 firebombs were dropped on it during the raids. As if this were not enough, the next day, which was Ash Wednesday, while Dresden was still burning furiously from the two attacks of the night before, a huge force of American B-17s started pounding on what was left of the magnificent city. The great shame and tragedy of it all was that the pilots who were dropping these bombs were white Gentiles killing their own brothers in a battle that the Germans had been fighting for the preservation of the white race. What these white pilots, with their mentality deranged by Jewish brain pollution, did not know, but their Jewish bosses did, was the fact that 26,260 Allied prisoners of war were in the same area. Just another example of Jewish evilness and treachery. Even though the American and British soldiers were fighting to save these Jewish parasites from their just dues, the Jews themselves didn't mind at all having the white prisoners killed as well. But this was still not the end of Jewish fiendishness and barbarity. A final touch of Jewish treachery was added when, after the B-17s had left, 37 B-51 American fighters, those are Thunderbolts, were ordered to fly low over the city and kill anything that moved. This they did by shooting and machine gunning people trying to escape along the roads out of Dresden, or people who were trying to save themselves along the banks of the River Elbe. These B-51 fighters flew low along the banks of the river and killed everything in sight. Does this sound familiar? Remember the vicious ideology of the Jews as laid out in Deuteronomy 20:16? Everything has to be killed. Okay, you leave nothing alive. That's basically what they were saying, and that is the practice of the Jew. Let us remember that this is the vicious Jew religion, a religion that they had been practicing for thousands of years, a religion that they have swindled the white man into as making it part of his own in order to worship, idolize, and protect the Jew. After the war, the world was lied to and told that only 35,000 people were killed during the raids. And they even said fewer than that. I remember hearing something like in the teens, in the 20s, slowly they would admit to the numbers, but it was much more than that. But as the years passed, they finally admitted to 135,000 deaths. This still was a big lie. The actual number of people killed between February 13th and 14th was 350,000 to 400,000. To add a further insult to treachery, when the war was over, the Jews invented a huge hoax accusing the Germans of killing and incinerating 6 million Jews in order to heap hatred on the Germans and create sympathy for the treacherous Jews who had started the war in the first place. In order to try to substantiate this colossal hoax, the Jews showed photograph after photograph of heaps of burned corpses. But the corpses they were showing were not Jews at all, but Germans that had been burned in the once beautiful city of Dresden. We white brothers and sisters have a tremendously powerful lesson to learn from this horrible event. The overwhelming lesson is that the Jews regard all white people as their enemies, and that it is only a matter of time when they will try to incinerate the cities and people of America just as they did Dresden, provided we will let them do it. The second lesson that we can learn is that it took the willing cooperation of white pilots, the British Air Force and the American Air Force, to do this treacherous deed, the killing of their own white brothers. This illustrates again and again how powerful is propaganda. The third lesson that we must learn is that there is no compromising, no negotiating, and no coexistence with the treacherous and diabolical Jew. And for those who don't understand this, Here is Ben Klassen saying this, and there's others, but there's no compromising, no negotiating, and no coexistence with the treacherous and diabolical Jew. Get this into your goddamn head. The religion and their inbred parasitic nature drives them on to destroy all that is good in this world. There is no peace, no coexistence with this vicious evil. It is either them or it is us. Being a member of the great white race, I would rather we survive than this evil parasite. As I have said before, the Jews have committed millions of atrocities throughout their history, and these atrocities are continuing into an ever-increasing crescendo today. It is not my purpose to recapitulate them all by any means. Since this would take a whole encyclopedia, I am only going to mention briefly a few more, since I do not want to take the space. In 1917, the Russian Revolution broke out and overthrew the Tsarist government. This was done by a hardcore of Jewish terrorists, trained by the Jew Leon Trotsky in New York's East Side. In large part, it was financed by Jacob Schiff, a Jewish multimillionaire at the heart of the Wall Street banking firm of Kuhn, Loeb and Company. Among other Jews, he contributed $20 million toward the success of the Russian Revolution. On August 30, 1918, the Jew Uritsky, who was then head of the Cheka, the Jewish secret police in Russia, was assassinated and Lenin was wounded. The Bolsheviks used this as an excuse for instituting the Red Terror, which began the following day, and which in a sense has continued for more than 50 years. The entire membership of the Communist Party, which in 1918 numbered perhaps no more than 100,000, was turned into a Jewish instrument of murder. Its purpose was twofold: to inspire dread and horror among the Russian masses and to exterminate the middle and upper classes, namely the best of the leadership. The leadership formerly consisted almost entirely of the white Russians. Men and women were executed or imprisoned, not because of any offense, but simply because they belonged to what the Jews considered as potential leadership class. This category came to include just about every merchant, professional person, and landowner. The Jews not only murdered these upper and middle class white productive citizens, but members of their families were murdered as well. Little time was wasted in sifting the evidence and classifying people as they rounded them up in nightly raids. The prisoners were generally hustled to the old police station not far from the Winter Palace. Here, with or without perfunctory interrogation, they were stood up against a courtyard wall and shot. The staccato sounds of death were muffled by the roar of truck motors kept going for the purpose. This was the Red Terror in action. This kind of terror was going on throughout the cities of Russia. Soon every factory, every government bureau, every school district, and every army unit would function under the gimlet eye of a Jewish commissar. Soon the blood of human beings would be oozing from under the doors of communist execution chambers as tens of thousands of white men and women were butchered like cattle in a slaughterhouse. Soon, 5 million landowners were deliberately starved to death as part of a premeditated plan. I might add that one of my earliest childhood recollections is when I personally lived through the famine in Russia in 1922. The Jews moved rapidly to exterminate the Gentile leader class of the entire nation by murdering every white factory owner, lawyer, and government leader, army officer, and every other person who had been or might be a potential leader. Every church and cathedral was gutted. Every priest and teacher became a criminal in his own community. The standing population of the slave labor camps soon reached an excess of 15 million. It is a long, grisly story, but in summation, some 20 million of the white Russian leadership class were butchered and murdered in accordance with the directives of the Jewish Talmud. Today, Russia is a zombie-like proletariat slave state under the heel of the Jewish dictators. The population is docile, hungry, willing to work, easily controlled, without leadership, and completely incapable of revolt. The Jewish ritual of murder goes on, and some 20 million more of these pitiable slaves are the inmates of bestial internment camps, tortured and goaded by their Jewish slave masters. And now about Bela Kun in Hungary. The Jew Bela Kun, whose real name was Kohn, had participated in the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Following the armistice, he and a group of Jewish revolutionaries, using forged passports, moved into Hungary, well supplied with finances by the Soviet government and aided by the pro-communist resident Jewish population. Bela Kun soon became the dictator of all Hungary. Bela Kun's program was to arm at once and forcibly transfer every industry and all landed property without reservation into the hands of the proletariat. He nationalized all banks, all concerns with over 200 employees, all landed property over 1,000 acres, every building other than workmen's dwellings, all jewelry, all private property above a minimum, which consisted of 2 suits, 4 shirts, 2 pairs of boots, 4 socks, was seized. The result of this program was in Russia economic and social chaos. The land, buildings, and industries of a nation cannot be nationalized overnight without creating havoc. Therefore, as in Russia, such a program could only be enforced by resorting to the Red Terror, the communization of the country's industrial and agricultural resources produced a famine in the cities, and this, combined with the peasants' hatred for the Jews, resulted in Kun's eventual overthrow. Nevertheless, during his 3-month reign of terror, tens of thousands of people, priests, army officers, merchants, landowners, and professional people were butchered in a sadistic frenzy that was characteristic of Bela Kun and his band of Jewish cutthroats. It is interesting to note that it was the peasants on the farms who had little education but had enough instinct to realize that the culprits were the Jews who took the appropriate measures to revolt against them and bring them to heel. And the Civil War, one of the most destructive atrocities that the Jews inflicted upon the young American Republic, was the perpetration of the war between the states, raging between 1861 and 1865. The cause of that fratricidal war was neither the issue of slavery, nor was it the desire of the southern states to succeed. It was something altogether different, something our history books have never mentioned. Between the decades of 1820 and 1860, due to climate, soil, the cotton economy, and other factors, a tremendous economic expansion was taking place in the southern states. Led by the plantation owners, a significant new aristocracy of landowners and millionaires was evolving at a healthy growth in this area. Along with the tremendous expansion, a genuine American tradition, a way of life, was being established. It embodied all the best aspects of the classical civilization of Roman Greece, and in fact, much of the architecture was fashioned after the classical era. Many of the cities, such as Athens, Rome, Atlanta, Augusta, Alexandria, and others, were named after their counterparts in classical ancient history. A fine new culture was developing, the best of its kind in the New World. With it, a large new group of millionaires was suddenly being created. Even a small city like Natchez, Mississippi, had more millionaires than any other city in the United States, except for New York and a few others. A similar situation existed in Atlanta, Richmond, New Orleans, and in general spread over most of the southern states. They were, in fact, extremely prosperous. At the bottom of most of the newly created millionaires was the cotton economy. The most significant fact about these newly rich millionaires was that they were mostly all Anglo-Saxon. It took a spirit of brash adventure, a tremendous amount of energy and work to blaze new trails in the virgin lands and build a large and profitable cotton plantation. This the white man did with zeal. It was the white man at his best. In this, the Jew did not participate, since pioneering and blazing the wilderness is not his stock in trade. With the tremendous amount of new wealth that was created by the white Anglo-Saxons of the South, also came financial power and political power that foreboded a serious threat to the Jewish financial power of the Eastern Seaboard. And herein lies the real cause of the Civil War. The Jew foresaw in the new white Anglo-Saxon aristocracy of the South a serious potential threat to his financial and political stranglehold, not only over America, but over England and the rest of the world as well. The Jew determined that this power must not only be broken, but it must be demolished. The best way to do it, as usual, was to divide up the white race into two factions, invent some idiotic, spurious issue, incite them to war, and have them slaughter each other. This the Jew did with a fury unmatched in American history. Whereas neither the whites of the North nor of the South really cared a whit about the black man as such, nevertheless, through clever manipulation of propaganda and the levers of government, a war that the Jews had planned for years was actually brought about. It was a ghastly, vicious, and cruel war. On the Union side, the men killed in battle, dying from wounds, disease, and from other causes, added up to a total of almost 360,000 dead. The Union side also had another 281,000 wounded and maimed. And on the Confederate side, a total of over 259,000 were killed, and the number wounded was never even recorded. Although this amounted to almost 1 million casualties in a young nation that in the 60s, that's the 1860s, had a population of only approximately 32 million, this is a ghastly toll. But it only tells part of the history. While the flower of America's young manhood was being slaughtered and maimed, the Jews were financing both the North and the South with huge loans. The House of Rothschild, then as now, the aristocrats of worldwide Jewish banking and their agents strongly implanted in both the governments of the North and of the South. In the North, they had their man, August Belmont, a Jew, who in league with Samuel B. Chase, the Secretary of the Treasury, was in charge of the Rothschild interest. In the South, the Rothschilds had Judah P. Benjamin, a Jew and a relative of the Rothschild family, as Secretary of the Treasury for the Confederacy. Abraham Lincoln tried to bypass the Jew bankers and issued $346 million of interest-free national currency called greenbacks. This the Jew banking houses viewed with great alarm. They knew that should this become an established precedent, that the government could furnish its own money without interest, this would be followed by other countries, and they would be out of business. They brought to bear all their tremendous power to have this stopped, and for this reason, they had Lincoln assassinated by another Jew whose family name was not Booth, but Botha. The end of the Civil War was by no means the end of this horrible exercise in self-destruction. The Jews were determined to smash the South once and for all, and they went about it with a vengeance, even before the war was over. But the South was already defeated. They engaged in a wanton program of destruction that had absolutely no necessity in military strategy whatsoever. They had Sherman cut a swath 60 miles wide from Atlanta to the sea, the heart of the wealth of Southern Confederacy, and burn, pillage, and demolish every piece of physical asset that the white man had built over the years. From there, the destroyers turned north into South Carolina and continued to cut a broad swath of destruction, tear, and wanton annihilation. When the war was over, the destruction was pursued with an intensified fury. The South's commerce and financial structure had been utterly demolished. Northern carpetbagger Jews came in and bought up properties and plantations that were worth hundreds of thousands before the war, now due to the bankruptcy of the Southern economy, could now be bought up in cases for only a couple of hundred dollars. Just as in Germany after World War I, when the Jews had brought that country to its knees in bankruptcy, the Jews now swarmed into the South, and for a few cents on the dollar, they bought up all the valuable properties that were formerly owned by the Anglo-Saxon white man. Nor was this the end of their diabolical program of destruction. With Union Army bayonets to back them up, they were now determined to not only make the newly liberated nigger the equal of the white Southerner, but they were determined to make him his overlord. The white male population was completely disenfranchised. Women still couldn't vote in any case, under the excuse that it had been in rebellion to the white government. Under the leadership of carpetbagger Jews, the niggers were now the only ones who had the right to vote, and they became legislators, senators, governors, judges, and in short, were the Jews' stooges for political power in the South. White women were molested and attacked by the newly released savage mob of black animals. And the white man had absolutely no governmental protection whatsoever. The Jew, then as now, launched a massive drive to promote the mongrelization of the races in the former Confederate states. It was through the heroic efforts of the white man, organizing through the newly formed Ku Klux Klan, that he finally regained freedom and political power again. One of the most shameful and miserable periods in the history of America was endured by the South during its so-called Reconstruction days, a period that was not really so much devoted to Reconstruction as it was to looting the white population and consolidating the power of the Jews in an area that had previously been dominated by the creative and prosperous white man. It took some states 15 to 20 years to again free themselves from under the heel of the Jew tyranny. When they finally did drive the niggers from power and gain control of their own legislatures again, the South was still a broken and impoverished area. Even today, after 100 years, the South has never regained the financial or political position that it had previously to the Civil War. Even today, the South, still being the stronghold of white resistance against mongrelization, is the hated target of the Jewish conspiracy. It is against the South that the Jews are directing their most vicious programs of school busing and the most persistent attacks against the white man himself. Now, Jewish use of wars to further consolidate their power. We have seen from the above short summary of the Civil War how the Jews use wars to smash their enemies and to consolidate their financial and political power. There is nothing new about this in the long, treacherous history of the Jews. They have done this from time immemorial. The last half of this particular podcast on Jew atrocities may be heard in part two. If you look for the same name, Jew atrocities and part two, and you'll hear the last 45 minutes. We will end for the evening here, and I hope everyone got something out of the readings I included this evening. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. And those were David Lane's 14 words. Have a good night.